You are listening to Wine and Dime, a podcast that combines two passions, wine and personal finance. Hosted by Amy Irvine, certified financial planner and owner of Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies, located in Corning, New York. And now, here's your host, Amy Irvine.
Welcome to this edition of Wine and Dime with Amy Irvine. Today's guest, Jessica Yeager, is going to be talking about scholarship seeking opportunities. Jessica has formed a business based on her experience, and I think you're going to love her story. This isn't somebody standing off on the sidelines talking about things that you should be doing. This is somebody who went through the thick of it and actually discovered a process that I think will help many of our listeners. So Jessica, welcome to Wine and Dime.
Thanks, Amy.
So tell us a little bit about your story.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Kansas City, Missouri, and I went to a small all-girls school for high school, and we had one counselor for the entire school. And my school, we didn't have a lot of students who even applied to Ivy League schools or Harvard, you know, like Harvard or schools like MIT or Stanford, let alone attend them. But when I was a senior, I thought, you know, I had really great grades, great test scores. I had things that I was really passionate about. And I thought, you know, I could get into these schools. So I ended up applying to and getting into Harvard, Yale, Stanford, MIT, Cornell, Columbia, WashU in St. Louis. So a lot of really, really good schools. And I ended up going to Harvard for undergrad and MIT for grad school, studying environmental engineering. And a few years ago, I decided that, you know, I had been tutoring since I was in seventh grade. But when I graduated from grad school, you know, I got a real job like we're all supposed to, and I stopped tutoring. But a few years ago, I was like, you know, I really love tutoring. And so I picked it up again. And in that process, I, you know, rekindled my love of working with students one-on-one. And I realized, you know, there's probably a lot of students that were like me, where they maybe didn't have that much guidance for applying to these really competitive schools. And so I started my website, Impress the Ivies, and I just started sharing tips with parents and students about applying to college. And I had parents reach out to me to work with their students one-on-one. And then last year, I thought about the fact that there's not a lot of information out there that's really good and trustworthy. And I put together a virtual summit, the Dream College Summit, where I interviewed dozens of college experts on all things, you know, whether it's the application or the essay or financial aid, and put that together. And my Dream College Summit for this year was really great. It was it aired live in August and September.
Yeah, I was actually at the XY Planning Conference when that launched, and I kept sneaking away to listen to some of the sessions because, you know, as a financial advisor, this is an area that is one of the biggest investments in our clients' lives or our clients' kids' lives. And I don't feel, to be quite honest, like I can tell them, you know, recommendations on how to save and, you know, perhaps some strategies on how they might want to, you know, look at the costs of different colleges and make colleges sort of compete against each other a little bit for their child. But when it comes to some of the topics that were covered, I felt, first of all, I loved it. And I, you know, I just thought, oh my gosh, every parent that has a child that is a freshman in college should be listening to this, or excuse me, freshman in high school should be listening to this, because there are all of these other avenues that I felt a little embarrassed that I didn't even think about. And when it comes to the application process, boy, I think there's so much being left on the table. And I certainly am not knowledgeable enough in my, and I don't think a lot of us are, if we're really, really, truly willing to admit it. We don't know where all of the twists and turns and real opportunities are. And that's really what you spent a lot of time with this program sort of developing. All of the speakers were incredible. I mean, national known, and really provided a lot of great information. And I know your story a little bit too. I read on your website, you know, you went through this. It wasn't just, it's not just like you sitting on the sideline saying, hey, here's a great program. You know, as I was listening to all of, I knew that you had gone to Harvard and then MIT, but I didn't realize that you had been accepted to all of these other colleges. And I'm thinking, oh, way to be an underachiever. You know, wow, you know, let's not just apply to Harvard and MIT. Let's go to Columbia and Yale. You know, the cost of something like that is staggering. I mean, when you look at the cost. So obviously you had to go through the process of determining, how am I going to pay for this? I mean, your parents may have helped, but you can't go to those colleges without doing some financial planning that goes along with it. So what was your process and your application process? Because to be accepted at these schools, it's not easy.
Right. Absolutely. So a couple of things. So one, my family had a lot of demonstrated need. So that was really great for the schools that I got into. So all of those really competitive Ivy League schools, MIT, Stanford, they meet 100% of your financial need. So I actually went to Harvard for less than my sister went to University of Kansas, which is as surprising as that might be. So that's one thing for parents and families who have a lot of demonstrated need. They think, oh, well, that's a $50,000 a year price tag. I can't possibly afford that. But in fact, those schools may be the most, maybe the least expensive for you because they meet so much financial need. Now, they are obviously very difficult to get into, but if your student is competitive enough and can potentially get into those schools, I would never tell a parent who has a lot of demonstrated need that they shouldn't apply to those schools because of cost, because like I said, they meet 100% of your need. So that is a really good option if you do have a lot of demonstrated need. For the parents and families who don't, who are like, you know, I make more than that sort of cutoff where they're meeting a lot of your need, but $50,000 a year is still very, very expensive for many, many families. What I actually recommend to those students is to, like, you might think, oh, well, my student isn't, you know, they're not competitive for a Harvard type school. But there are so many other schools that offer merit-based aid that many, many students, even if your student, you know, isn't interested in one of those like Ivy League type schools, these more middle tier schools can offer full tuition, full rides for students who are really good academically.
And when they're thinking about these schools, I think one of the most important things, at least that I sort of learned listening to all of the different aspects of the summit, was in that application process, you've got to tell the story, right? Yes. You've got to convince them that, well, number one, that you're going to be successful because that's who they want to bring on. But you've got to tell a story, right? And I think that's one of the things that I took away that, you know, I went to college a long time ago and I don't remember really the application process per se. I think it was very different back then anyways. Yeah. But, you know, when you wrote your story, who sort of gave you guidance on what you should be saying, or how did you learn that?
Yeah. So And I think that's an important thing to note is applying to colleges now in basically the last 10, 15 years is just very, very different than it was, say, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's just extreme, much, much more competitive, and many more students have, you know, 4.0s, near perfect test scores. So the way to set yourself apart is in that story that you're telling, exactly what you mentioned. So for me, the way that I sort of shaped my story and my application, like I said, I didn't have very much guidance from like a application coach or a guidance counselor. However, my senior English class, we actually wrote our college essay as part of a class assignment. And this was a really great experience for me because it allowed me, we did a lot of peer editing, which I love. I always encourage students to do that because it can be very difficult to write this college essay, which is different from any other essay you've ever written, most likely. It's hard to write it in a vacuum. So my essay, I mean, I spent weeks and weeks, if not longer, on my essay. I went through peer editing. My teacher looked at it and gave comments. And that essay, so I tell this story a lot, but I use that essay for all of my applications except for the one that I didn't get accepted to, which was Princeton. Princeton had four short answers that I did, you know, over a weekend that clearly showed them, hey, she didn't spend a lot of time on this application, so she's probably not going to go there even if she's accepted. And that's basically the worst thing you can tell. You can show a college that you're not going to go there. So I really think that my essay had a big impact on my acceptance to so many really competitive schools. And the reality is I just spent the time to make it a really powerful essay that, you know, told a unique and memorable story.
And that carries on to the next, I mean, so, you know, applying for colleges that you want to go to and writing that essay is super important. But then the next step is also asking for scholarship money that goes mm-hmm. along with that. Yeah. And that is one thing when people come to me for the planning process of, you know, paying for college, I'm constantly saying, you know, here's some websites that you can go out and explore for some mm-hmm. scholarships and apply for anything that you think, even if you don't completely qualify, apply for these. But a big piece of it is definitely the passion behind those essays. Yeah. And that is one of the things that when I sort of cyber stalked what was going on with your company and listened to some of the programs that you were putting together, I'm like, wow, this is where I think there's great value in hiring a coach mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, you want to call it. I mean, we hire people like me, a financial coach. We hire people as a training coach. If people came to me and said, hey, can you help me write this essay? I would definitely be the wrong person. I was great in numbers. I was great in math. I'm good at articulating what the regulations say. But when it comes to getting into colleges, you know, having somebody that can do that peer review, because I don't know of any schools in our area that do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So having somebody that could be a peer review, or maybe somebody's struggling articulating what they want to come across as a college applicant or a scholarship applicant. Mm-hmm. And that's some of what you do on that individual basis, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And just speaking to that, I had a student last year who won over $180,000 worth of scholarships. So if you, you know, think about the potential upside to having a coach really help you hone in on getting that, getting those huge merit scholarships, especially from schools themselves, from the institution, it can really, really pay off. I mean, that's a pretty good return, rate of return.
Right. I mean, $180,000, this individual is going to walk out of college pretty much debt free. I mean, they've pretty much got it covered for the most part. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And student loans, not to diverge too much, but you know, that's an area that I'm extremely passionate about because I see so many. In fact, we're recording this session on a Saturday morning and I was talking to somebody just prior to you, 7 o'clock this morning, somebody who is making around $50,000 a year and paying $1,200 a month in student loan payments. It's devastating. I mean, yes. they can't buy a house. They can't even buy a car. They have to lease one to get the payment low enough for them to even be able to afford it. So this is affecting the end result of not getting the proper funding for college is affecting that next generation hugely. And so that's why, for me, that's why I'm like, oh, can I please interview you? because this is where, in my opinion, it starts, is the finding the money. And even if you have to pay for that coaching to find the money, the rewards on the other end of that degree are huge, and it's so important in my opinion. So I'll step off my soapbox now, but I'm so excited that there's this, and I haven't been able to find many models like yours. Mm-hmm. There are companies out there that will offer to help people through the process, but it's this writing process, this application process, and this scholarship seeking application process that I think makes you extremely unique. So I'm really excited about your business model, and you know, going out to your website for people that you know are interested in exploring, it's impresstheivies.com is the website that they can go to, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And from your angle, you know, you're taking on people and you're helping them. Where are you seeing sort of some of the, when are people involving you in their lives, number one? And when would you suggest that they involve you, number two? And then what are you seeing, you know, for people that bring you on a little bit late in the game, sort of the skeletons in the closet that they need to avoid, you know, or that they're making mistakes on?
Yeah, so typically I am helping students during the application process. I will say, you know, I definitely have students reach out to me a month before early decision applications are due or less. And that's less ideal because if you remember, I said I spent, you know, weeks, if not longer, on my essay. But often when students reach out to me, the student has already put together a large portion of their application. They already know which schools they want to apply to. So that's typically fine. I do recommend, you know, if you are looking for a college application coach, the best time to reach out is really towards the end of your student's junior year. And if you are a parent that's not sure if your student's doing the things that are going to make them stand out, then of course earlier, you know, as early as freshman year can be very helpful to coach students to really explore deeply those things that they care about so that they can have this, you know, very impressive resume once they get to senior year. But the big things I would say, especially when it comes to thinking about the entire process, including financial aid, that I find is one, that students and parents, they don't have a well-balanced list. College list. And what I mean by that is they might have a lot of really competitive schools, maybe Ivy Leagues, which are great. And especially, like I said, if you have a lot of demonstrated need, but if you don't, then those are going to be full pay schools for your family. And so it's really important to have a good number of those middle tier colleges. So if you go to a ranking list, U.S. News and World Report, and you look at sort of the schools in the middle of the list, often those schools have very prestigious merit-based scholarships for students at their school that would go to their school. So if you're child is, you know, competitive for an Ivy League, they're going to be really competitive for those scholarships at those more mid-tier schools. And I always tell parents this, especially if your student is interested in going to med school or law school or business school or grad school after undergrad, it's much more important what med school they go to or what law school they go to than their undergrad. So if they can go somewhere where they're going to be at the top of their class, they're going to, you know, maybe it's a little less competitive, so they'll have more time to study for the MCAT, and they're going to go there for free, I would really recommend that versus going to, you know, Harvard, because that can be, I had friends applying to med schools that had a very hard time from Harvard because it's very, very hard to be at the top of your class. It's really competitive, so you don't have as much time maybe to study for the MCAT. So those are just some things that I that is probably not what parents are told. They're told, you know, Harvard's the best no matter what, but that might not be the case for your family. So I think that's a really big one. The other really big one with the application that I find, and this is with just the overall application and the essays, are, like I said, this is something that students aren't really taught to do, taught to talk about themselves, taught to brag about themselves, taught to tell stories. And so often when I am reading a student's essay that they've done without my help, it's not very story-based. Sometimes it's more like a list of their accomplishments and things like that. And the reality is that admissions committees spend maybe 5 minutes looking at your student's application. So they really need to capture their attention. Yeah, yeah. And they need to be able to remember that essay, and you just remember stories better than a list of accomplishments. So I really always have the students I work with write in stories, because that way they'll be remembered. They can be, the admissions committee, the admissions reader can sum your student up in a couple of sentences, because that's what they need to do. They need to tell the committee exactly why this student is a perfect fit for the school. And if, you know, it's all over the place, that's hard to do.
That's amazing. 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. They spend 5 minutes. I mean, that you better start out with a bang in order for them to make, you know, make them want to continue reading through the story. Mm-hmm. I know when I write blogs, you know, the goal behind any blog is to keep it in a 5 minute window, like keep it short enough that somebody can get through it. Actually, 3 minutes is more ideal is the statistics, which for me is very challenging because I want to tell the whole like detail of everything. But I think that's important for people to know. And I want to go back to something that you said about, you know, with students that even, you know, begin to work with you even in their freshman year and talking about where to get involved. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I've seen about scholarships in particular is that your eligibility for some of those scholarships can be based on something so minimally that would be easy for you to be involved in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've seen dancers, for example, is one area where, you know, you can get some major scholarships by participating in some non-for-profit organizations. Mm-hmm. And getting, you know, the scholarship really has nothing to do with dancing, but it has everything to do with the fact that you were involved in, like locally here's our Cornell Cooperative Extension. So, you know, being involved with like 4-H or something like that can get you some other scholarships. And as a dancer, you wouldn't think about that necessarily. Mm-hmm. But boy, you know, having those conversations in early years about diversifying your outside activities, not just your academic activities, is super important because you only have 4 years, well, really three, because, you know, you're really kind of applying in that junior year and you need to have that resume built. So, you know, I think that people often wait until that junior year and then it's too late. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that from my angle, I think reaching out to somebody earlier, even if it's minimal, you know, even if it's just an hour long conversation to get all of these tips is super I think, helpful down the road. I think it's going to make a big difference.
Definitely. Definitely. And the other thing, your comment about the student loan crisis really makes you think, because I think, you know, maybe 30 years ago, college was seen and it was okay to see it as this, you know, exploratory thing. Like, I don't really know what I want to do. And that's what I'll find out in these 4 years. But now that it costs $200,000, that's not really going to be the best use of your money or time. So what I really love about that is not only are students building a resume and, you know, collecting these great stories that might turn into amazing essays and interview responses, but it's really helping them figure out what they want to do after college, what they want to study in college, you know, what they care about, how they want to impact the world. And it's really important for students in high school to be thinking about that so that when they do decide on a college, they decide on a major, decide on a career, they have a good idea of what that means.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like when I was in college or when I was in high school, we took some aptitude tests, mm-hmm. you know, and I always joke about this because the two career fields that it was suggested I would do well in was nursing and teaching. And I remember looking at those results and I remember having this conversation with my mom, and my mom and I said, nursing? Like, who in the world thought that would be good for me? I don't do bodily functions. And so like, that is off the table. That is not going to happen for me. And then the only thought that I had about teaching was like in the traditional sense of teaching. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, I just spent, you know, 12 years of my life or better trying to get out of school. Why the heck would I spend 5 more years trying to get back in, mm-hmm. you know? And it didn't resonate with me what teaching could be. Right. You know, now I understand it. Like, now I get why that would be a good field, because I do. I love educating. That's a big mm-hmm. piece of people that work with me. I tell them, like, I'm not just going to give you advice. You have to sit through why I'm telling you this. I want you to be educated. I never want you to come back and say, I wish I had known. That would be the worst words that somebody could say to me. Mm-hmm. So I get it now, but I think if somebody had worked with me through at least my sophomore, junior, senior year, I would have had a better understanding of what that meant. Mm-hmm. Not that I would have changed what I ended up going to school for, which was ultimately accounting, mm-hmm. because I loved numbers and I yeah. loved my accounting classes in high school. But I think it would have been clearer to me what my path might have been. Like, I mm-hmm. chose that because, well, I'm going to college. I like this, you know. Mm-hmm. But I would have had a better understanding of what my broader options are, because right. when I first came out of college, I worked for a transit company. I only did 1 year in the non-financial services industry. But it was clear to me, like, this was a mistake. Oh, great. Is this what the rest of my life is going to look like? Where, again, I think if I had worked with somebody to sort of set some expectations, mm-hmm. then I would have had a clear path and a clear understanding of what I really loved. And I feel fortunate that I ended up in a career that I get to do every morning, and I'm blessed to get out of bed mm-hmm. and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. But it took a few years to get me down that path. And I think what you're doing, and I think the services that you're offering, you know, really do, the sooner the student starts with somebody like you, the sooner, you know, the better they might have an understanding of what their talents are,
exactly.
what they love to do. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that you're doing with them isn't just the essay writing. I mean, that College Summit was, you know, more than that. It was,
right.
it was, or Dream Summit, I'm sorry, the, you know, was really more about, what are some of the things that I should be thinking, or parents or whoever attends? I mean, I think it would be great for students to sit through that, because it just gave so much food for thought, even for, you know, somebody my age. So again, I am very excited about what you're doing. you know, and really think that this is an awesome venture that you're going down. And I think so many people could find use in it. So hopefully by listening to this podcast, and I'll be pushing out some, you know, information as other events come out to clients and on my website to for people to link to so that they know about what you're doing. But yeah, I would say, you know, from a standpoint of what are the biggest mistakes you see people making, it's waiting too long to get this conversation started.
Yep.
Yeah. And so anything else that you would like to share about your business before we sort of switch gears to get a little bit more personal about Jessica?
So I would say that if you, like you were saying, if you want more information, go to impresstheivies.com. You can sign up for my newsletter, and I send everyone a free ultimate guide to the Common App that includes, you know, tools and tips for making your college application really stand out. And then you can always check out my Dream College Summit. There's a link on my website there too. And then, like you said, I do work one-on-one with students, so you can always email me, jessica@impresstheivies.com, if you have questions or you might be interested in working with me one-on-one.
And just, I mean, if responsiveness has been incredible, just, you know, something like this has been amazing. So I just sort of push that plug a little bit further for people that, you know, that's a frustration when you're applying for some of this stuff is people getting back to you. Yeah. And I think that's important for people to know that they're not alone.
Right.
You know, they don't have to do this by themselves.
Yep.
Yeah. And it feels lonely. Like, you know, that's one of the things that, that I hear people say, like, you know, there must be all these people in the industry that are doing the same thing, but I feel so alone. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're offering is to make them not feel so alone, but yet give them the competitive edge. So, and again, we're recording this podcast via web, so we're not actually able to spend a moment to take a sip here where I normally would with people that we're discussing. But Jessica has a passion for wine like mine, dry, red. And so prior to us actually starting to record, we started talking about some of the Finger Lakes wines that I think she's gonna like. And one that I suggested and I'm going to send for her to try is McGregor's Rob Roy. So I think for people that like a blend that's smooth and enjoyable to drink with just about anything, even in the summertime, I think she's going to really like that. I certainly do. So for those of you that are listening and looking for this week's pick, that's my recommendation. And like the information on Jessica's business, I'll also have a link in the show notes about that particular wine. So switching gears just a little bit, as a kid, were you ever included in money conversations?
So I really like that question. It's interesting to me. I wouldn't say that I was included in money conversations per se, but my mother was always very, very frugal. So she really, you know, taught us. We always shopped at places like Aldi and, you know, Sam's Club. And she was just very instilled in us this frugality of shopping. And then the other thing that I'm not sure if I just picked it up with, you know, through osmosis or what, but my parents were always very big on never carrying credit card debt, but always using credit cards that have, you know, give cash back. So that really always stood out to me as a child. Like I don't think I even understood the idea of not paying off your credit cards every month. Like it just didn't occur to me. So it was more, I think, through osmosis than really having a, you know, conversation about money that I picked up, you know, certain things like that.
And I think if parents are open about, you know, some of those conversations, kids do pick things up by osmosis. And I think especially the whole not carrying a credit card balance thing is super, super important. I was just working with somebody the other day that they're trying to get out of credit card debt. And they're like, you know, I just can't seem to get ahead because I put new purchases on there and I'm trying to pay off the balances. So we actually had them start paying the balances weekly, like any new purchases weekly, and then make the normal payment at the end of the month as well. So that, you know, they didn't have to try to figure out like, how do I catch up? They just... Right. Every week went in, added up all their new purchases, made the payments, and then at the end of the month when the normal bill would come due, you know, they'll be out of debt within about a year if they keep that up. So I think that's super important to share. And, you know, your parents, kudos to them for kind of, you know, educating you either through osmosis or just having honest conversations in front of you. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes a big difference. And, you know, would you say that there are any money mistakes that you've made that you think others can learn from?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say this was a mistake because it was a conscious mistake, let's say, but knowing what I know now. So when I graduated from Harvard, from undergrad, I had no debt, no student loans, because like I said, I had a lot of demonstrated need. I got a couple of outside scholarships. I worked, and my parents helped some. But so when I went to my grad program at MIT, I didn't automatically qualify for any financial aid or federal loans or scholarships. But I consciously made the decision. I said, okay, it's 1 year and I have no other student loan debt. And I know this program is going to really improve my chances of employment and my salary. And I graduated from undergrad in 2008, grad school in 2009. So it was not a great year for employment. as I'm sure everyone can remember.
Kind of a rough time starting your career, wasn't it?
It was challenging. But so I made that decision to take student loans for my grad program. And so it was a conscious decision. It wasn't just, you know, it didn't just happen to me. But knowing what I know now, I would have spent so much more time looking for outside scholarships, especially the small ones, the $1,000 ones, because if you can apply and get, you know, 50 $1,000 scholarships, that's $50,000. So now that's what I would have spent a lot more time looking for scholarships my senior year of undergrad and even throughout my grad school time, because then, you know, you're paying with other people's money, which is much better than paying with your own.
Well, I guess that brings up a good point even to what you're doing with your business and saying that, okay, once you get into the college and once you get some initial scholarships, that doesn't mean that you should stop.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're going to go on to grad school, then you really need to be thinking about it. So I think that's a great conscious mistake to share. And, you know, now that you've been through that process, I know that you don't have any children, but, you know, if you did, or as you think about having children or even nieces and nephews or cousins mm-hmm. that are young, what financial concerns do you have for that group right now?
So I think a lot of it goes, so I don't know if it's a concern because I think it's definitely, you can address it. But I think that, like I was saying before, students who are younger really need to explore those passions, those interests of theirs, what they care about, how they want to impact the world. So that when students go into college, they have a very good idea of what they want to do, what they want to accomplish in college and after college. Because I think if you're not really thinking about those things early on and trying things out, you know, maybe you think, I want to be a doctor, but I've never shadowed a doctor. I've never volunteered at a hospital. I don't really know what it is. And then you get to college and you do that for the first time and you're like, oh, this is not for me. Well, that's a lot of wasted time and money.
Exposure is really, they need to get out there and do some job shadowing and exploring get exposure to different things. No, that's great. I love that idea. And the job shadowing, especially, I mean, who, mm-hmm. if somebody asked me if they could come and, you know, shadow me for a day, that's kind of a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool, right?
Absolutely.
To say that somebody's exploring you and mm-hmm. your career. Yeah. Did you do any of that when you were a kid?
No. It's funny. I mean, I think it also depends
on
your
advice.
Yeah. I think it depends on your personality a little bit too. But I didn't really know any engineers, to be honest, but I was always really passionate about the environment, recycling. I was, you know, one of these, I don't know, strange kids, I guess, who I would like check out books at the library about how to make your own beauty products and things like that. So I was always very into environmental things, but I loved chemistry. I, you know, loved math. And so it was more about all of my interests connecting to environmental engineering than actually knowing what an environmental engineer did, which isn't maybe the best way to go about it, but that is a way to go about it.
Well, so your next business is going to be environmentally friendly makeup, is what I'm hearing. Or I can maybe get some tips from you, because I'm, you know, there's been a ton of studies about, you know, the products that we use and how it affects our body, even mm-hmm. hair products.
Oh, yeah.
And how it affects our body. And so, you know, cleaning products, all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, there's definitely some... There's some validation to exploring what your options are on that front. If we can save our planet as well,
right.
Then there's, you know, it's not just about trying to be environmentally friendly. It's there for the long term, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And would you, you know, now that you're out of college, you're working, you have this other business that's, you know, I'm sure growing rapidly in this industry. What is the biggest financial concern for you?
That is a good question. I'm a big planner, so I wouldn't say I'm pretty good with, you know, saving for particular big purchases and things like that. I think the biggest financial concern is really just it's really more about wanting to get ahead of myself, like, oh, well, I have this plan to have this amount saved in 2 years, but I'd rather have it saved today. That's really more what I, you know, the kind of pressure I would put on myself with something like that. So really just trusting the system. That's a better way for you to do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a good point. I think we all, I mean, you know, we're a culture of instant gratification.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that comes, you know, that can boil down two ways. It can be, you know, there's a balance in life and we don't know what is going to be thrown our way,
right.
You know, so you want to enjoy a little bit for sure. And that means that sometimes it does take us 2 years instead of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I think that's a valid point. And what I have found in working with some millennials is that, you know, there's this false understanding of this group that is bigger than the baby boomer generation, that they feel entitled. And I actually work with a fair number that are very conscientious about how they spend their money. And
mm-hmm.
it has to yeah. mean something. It really has to mean something. And they do exactly what you said. They're setting money aside because they're terrified that nobody is going to help them.
Mm-hmm.
They're survivors of that. You know,
yeah.
I lived through the financial crisis in a different way. I had a job. I kept a job. But people coming out of college at that point in time, they had a whole different view of
yeah.
what their life might be like. And so I think what you shared isn't that uncommon, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see for a lot of that generation is, you know, you just remember, you do have to have a balance.
Yeah.
That there needs to be. I'm not saying go blow it. I'm just saying, you know, you need to enjoy life a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
What would you consider some of the best? I think I heard, you know, your parents saying don't ever carry credit card mm-hmm. debt. But what do you think the best financial advice you've ever received is?
I would say, you know, that's probably the best from a overall standpoint. In little things, I think one thing that I also, you know, contributed to my 401k as soon as I could, but one thing that I didn't really think about that's a little more, I guess, complex would be just being sure that I was putting as much into retirement funds as I could. And that was something like I didn't know what a Roth IRA was for, you know, as soon as I could have been contributing to it. And I, you know, rightfully so, couldn't max out the 401k contribution as soon as I could, just because of, you know, when you're first starting out, that usually isn't in the cards. But that was something that, you know, if I had learned about those things a little bit sooner, I probably would have contributed more.
And, you know, when you learned about these things, you know, was it something you read or was it something you heard? And did somebody say, you know, you should diversify your retirement savings as much as you should diversify your retirement portfolio? So in other words, you should put, you know, at mm-hmm. least the max that the company is going to match in your 401k, but then consider a Roth as well. How did you kind of learn about that? Where did you get that information?
I learned about it online. I don't remember why I was looking at this information. Maybe it was something like I use Mint to track, you know, spending and things like that. Maybe it was an article on that or something like that. But yeah, it was really opening my eyes to the different options available for retirement savings.
And a little plug for mint.com for people that are looking for a good budgeting tool. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend that. It makes you very aware, sometimes painfully, of what you're spending in those various categories are and can help you plan and budget better. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you're using that. That was a great plug for that service. And it's so automated. You know, yes. You just hook up your accounts and everything feeds in. So there's no way to forget to record something.
Right.
So one of the questions that I love to ask both clients and guests on the podcast is, if money wasn't a barrier, what changes would you make to your life?
That's a really good question. I would say so I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and mm-hmm. housing here is very, very expensive. So I would say if money wasn't a barrier, I would live in a much bigger house. That would be my biggest thing.
I've seen some million-dollar houses that are smaller than you know, like 2,500 square feet.
Yeah. Definitely.
Beautiful area, but expensive mm-hmm. for sure.
Yes.
And what would you say your biggest accomplishments have been, either financially and or personally?
Well, one thing that I really, you know, I really love and is really an accomplishment for me is when my students get into their dream school or get, you know, over $180,000 worth of scholarships. Having my students with those accomplishments is just so fulfilling to me. It really makes me feel like, you know, I'm contributing to their success in life, and it really makes me so happy.
That's got to feel good. I mean, $180,000. Wow. I'd feel excited if I got one of my clients that. That would be awesome. And the final three questions, there's no, of course, right or wrong answers to any of these, but I love to ask different people this question. What is your definition of success?
My definition of success is really doing something that makes you happy, that keeps you interested and excited and challenges you, and you know, being content with with everything you're doing in life. And that doesn't mean every day is, you know, rainbows and sunshine, but it's really, you know, being in a place where you feel challenged, where you feel content and happy with what you're doing.
And that leads into the next question about what feeds your soul.
Yeah, you know, I would say there's a lot of things that feed my soul, but one of the things, especially with this topic, is, like I said, really contributing to the success of my students. You know, when you have students who are 17 starting their sort of real journey into adulthood, helping them start off on the right foot is just, it's so rewarding. I really love it.
And to share some of the knowledge that you've shared with us, some of the things that you wish you had done just a little different or wish you had known about earlier, pretty rewarding when you can see somebody succeed even better than what we've succeeded in. And my final question is, you know, is there any advice that you'd give to listeners that, you know, there's just one piece that they walked away from and, you know, listen to the final 30 seconds of this podcast that you'd really, really like for them to hear?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing when it comes to colleges is really the cost. It's just so expensive nowadays. So I really want parents and students to understand that there are so many options for paying for college. And it's really important that you look at, you know, all of the different colleges that might offer your student merit-based aid. You look at outside scholarships, focusing on those, you know, really small, maybe even local ones that you can get dozens of, and really just focusing on all those different options for paying for college.
And Jessica, I know you have some tools that you help and guide students with, and you have a special talent, and I cannot say thank you enough for spending your Saturday morning, an hour of your Saturday morning, sharing your journey, your advice, a little bit about your business. And as Jessica mentioned, you can reach her at jessicaandpresstheivies.com. You can go out to her website and presstheivies.com. Lots of great information out there. I'm going to have some information about her website out on my website for you guys to link directly to. And, you know, I think what you're doing is amazing, and I'm so thankful for you sharing your experience and your journey with all of these future individuals that are going to college. And I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
And that will about do it for this week's episode of Wine and Dime. You can visit Amy on the web at irvineadvise.com, or you can follow her on Twitter at Amy Irvine Advise, or on her Facebook page, Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies. If you have any questions, comments, or topics that you would like to hear about, feel free to contact us through Twitter or Facebook, and we will do our best to answer your questions. We would love to hear from you. And thank you for listening.